talk today is called How Much is Enough? And I'm thinking in particularly of right effort. So that's one of the Eightfold Path. And so for myself, I feel like, you know, whenever I'm doing something that it's not enough, so I'm never doing enough for work or for Zen or for my musical instruments or for the garden or for the house. So there's this sense of, you know, whatever I'm doing, it's never enough. And when we look at the great vows that we recited earlier, the many beings are numberless. I vow to end their suffering. Greed, hatred, and ignorance rise endlessly. I vow to abandon them. Dharmas are countless. I vow to wake to them. And Buddha's way is beyond attainment. I vow to embody it fully. So that gives another sense of, you know, that's pretty big and vast. And, you know, it's whatever you do is not really going to be enough. And sometimes the practice of Zen, so the Buddha said, you know, you should practice as if your hair is on fire. So that's a fairly stark image. And also we are, you know, invited to reflect on death and that life is very brief and to make the most of every moment that we have. And that sense of deep existential urgency and living with a kind of passion for life. So we're really there and living our life too fully. But then on the other hand, we also read about, like, for instance, when Dogen talks about the practice of meditation and saying, just sit, let thoughts come and go, practice non-thinking, you know, so that has a very different feel to it. And also feeling quite relaxed in the practice. So it's a bit of a paradox. So there's a sense of urgency about the practice, and then there's also a sense of just being with whatever is, and, you know, life arising and falling away, and you're just sort of present and open to it all. One of the ways that sometimes it's talked about in Buddhism is the sense of like a violin string. And so if it's too loose, you can't play on it. And if it's too tight, it sounds very screechy and horrible. So it's sort of finding the amount of effort that, you know, it's harmonious. So that you're playing the violin harmoniously, or you're living your life harmoniously, but you're not underdoing it, but you're also not over-striving in how you're living. In Buddhism, there's also the monastic tradition and the lay tradition. And so traditionally in a lot of countries where, you know, they have traditional Buddhists, it's often seen that the monastic tradition is really the one where the true practice can take place. And then the lay community supports that practice. But there's a sort of sense that, you know, when you're so busy earning money and looking after family and living in the world, that that's very difficult to live, you know, a fully Buddhist life, perhaps, that it's much easier to do that. When you dedicate yourself to living in a monastery. And of course, by choosing to give up your life and entering a monastery, that is a lot of effort there. So, you know, that's saying, basically saying my whole life is going to be the effort of the Buddhist path. But in our school, we don't have a monastic tradition. And there's also a sense that, yes, it is difficult to live a practice life in, you know, with all the demands that life makes on us, but that doesn't mean it's not that we can't have a practice life, you know, that actually the everyday, everything that happens every day is an invitation to practice. And so the traffic jam is also an invitation to practice, and the emails that come in, or all those annoyances or challenges, they're all actually calling us. So that sense of, you know, the dharmas are countless, so we constantly have dharmas happening, and we constantly have the sense of being awake to them and engaging with life as it is. One way we can think about our practice is that sense of not so much becoming a better person, so that sense of I'm going to work really hard on becoming a much better person than I have been, but perhaps more about creating the right conditions for the practice life. So we could see ourselves as, you know, a knight in shining armor, and we're going out to battle, and, you know, we're engaging with life with a lot of effort. That sort of myth of the hero, and that's actually quite a strong myth in our culture, you know, the person who saves the world, and, you know, lots of Hollywood movies are based on that idea. Someone's, you know, basically has to save the whole world. So that's one sort of way of looking at a life that's engaged and active. But another way could be the farmer or the gardener taking care of the soil. And so that's a lot more low key, and certainly doesn't have the same, you know, sort of Hollywood sheen of the knight in shining armor, and probably not a lot of newspaper articles about someone who's sort of taking care of the soil. But that might be a better way of thinking about our practice life. It's just preparing the soil for the right conditions of life, you know, that the right conditions can then flourish in the soil. So if we're very self-centered, we can think, I don't care about what's happening to others, what's happening to the environment, as long as I'm comfortable. So as long as I'm good, you know, then everything's fine. Another way to think about things like climate change is, you know, I have to be the one who saves the world. Like, it's really up to me. I have to work really hard to save the world. And in a way, that is still all about me. You know, I'm the one who has to do this, and I'm the one who has to have this drive. Stephen Batchelor, I sort of heard him talk recently, you know, talking about right effort. And I really like the way he phrased that, I practice life. He said, it's a commitment to engage with life in a way which makes a difference in the long term. It's creating conditions for something desirable to happen and for unwholesome reactivity to diminish. Yeah, and that really sort of spoke with me. So it's not so much about having the sense of who am I and what am I, you know, am I a good person, am I a bad person, am I getting better person and things like that. But it's more a sense of engagement with life, that we think in the long term, the way I live my life is actually going to make a difference just by those practices that I have and that I'm committed to doing day by day. And so the other part of the Eightfold Path is right view or understanding, samadhi. And that actually gives us the perspective on life. So it's a particular way of looking at life. And if we are, you know, practicing the Zen path or Buddhist path, then we sort of have that Buddhist perspective, and you think, yeah, I like that perspective. Living with that sort of understanding of life, about the interconnectedness of life, about the fact that life is impermanent and things come and go, the fact that my reactivity can be damaging, so I'm sort of more mindful of how I become reactive, that I can learn to lower that down a little bit through the practice of meditation and other practices as well. So I look at that and I think, yeah, that's a perspective on life that helps me to live a better life, to be more engaged with life and more supportive. And then another question is, when we think about effort, where does this effort actually come from? Is it a sense of having a sense of lack? You know, I'm not enough, just who I am. I need to actually be someone better. And one of the Zen precepts talks about meeting others on equal ground. And so when we think about effort, is that the sense of I need to be a better Zen student, or better this or better that? Or can we just be, I am practicing this path, and others are as well, and we're actually all in this together. So it's a much more community sort of focus rather than just it's all about myself. I find when I do Tai Chi, that's quite a nice way of sort of thinking about effort, because when we do Tai Chi, there is a lot of focus in the practice of doing Tai Chi. So we are very mindful of the movements and how we're using our body. And sometimes there's something called push hands, where you're actually working with someone else, and so we're also aware of their energy. But we never overextend, and we never sort of come in too far, and we never push very hard. Because as soon as you, for instance, when we punch in Tai Chi, we never straighten the arm. And partly that is, if you straighten the arm, it causes tense shoulder. So that's not very relaxing. But also it means that if someone kicks your arm, it's very easy to break. So you have this little bit of give. And then you don't overextend, because if you overextend, you're off balance and someone can easily push you. But also you're not like that, because when your hands are really in close, someone can just push you like that. So there's a sense of, and of course in Buddhism we talk about the middle way. So you're not overextending yourself, but you're also not coming in too close. You just have the sense of just enough space so you're strong, but you're not rigid. And the amazing thing about the practice like Tai Chi is that it's very gentle and flowing, but it's actually an incredibly powerful martial art. So it's actually, you're actually increasing your power by practicing it, but not in a way that's sort of harsh and sort of effortful. So there's sort of a way of thinking about the practice path and a few different, so the first step is to create conditions for reactivity not to arise and to embrace life as it is. And that's what we do in Zazen, when we just sit and we just sit with things rather than having that sense of having to either do something about it or run away from it or escape from it. But the practice of sitting just forces us to be. And over time, that helps us to be less reactive to situations in life as well. We can just sort of be more centered, and we don't have to immediately be reactive. And that's very, very helpful. And then we can stay with life as it is. And that helps us to take ethical care of life. And then the next step is to let reactivity go. So the more we practice, the more we can say, here I am. This has arisen, and I can actually allow that to go. I don't have to sort of... Sometimes we still need to respond to situations. So it's not just a passive way of living. But we can really start to notice what is that reactive part, that more primitive part that's actually sitting more in the limbic brain. We can recognize that, and then we can say, actually, I don't need to be involved in that. I can actually just let that go. And then we can also create conditions for moments of equanimity and non-reactivity. And again, we do that with the meditation. So after a while, the mind might calm. Some meditations, the mind's very busy and agitated. Other times, it's more calm. But particularly when we do like a retreat of a few days, there are usually moments where we just sit and the mind just becomes quite still. And so those moments are also very helpful for us to have that sense of equanimity. And that can also then sustain us in day-to-day life. And then there's a sense of sustaining this effort long-term. So it's not just something I need to work really hard now and then, you know, sort of tick it off and get it. But it's something that is a lifelong, or, you know, in some Buddhist ways of thinking, it's the work of many lifetimes. It's not even just about this lifetime, but the work of many lifetimes. And so it's about how can we make that path sustainable. So we are sort of walking it, but we're not overextending, but we're also not completely getting lost and sort of losing all sight of what this actually is about. And that can then help us to have that perspective and a sense of a framework around what we're doing. In Buddhism, the Eightfold Path is really that framework of the view and how we, you know, the framework, how we, the perspective we have on things. And then the contemplative practices of meditation and samadhi, and then also the ethical practices about how we then engage with life. And the three together form the Eightfold Path that then can sustain us. So Dogen has a wonderful quote that's in our reading on how to meditate. And he said, "Don't work towards freedom, but allow the work itself to be freedom."